not the voice of the Bucks, but I believe he's on the radio more than anybody else regarding the Milwaukee Bucks. Somebody else can keep track of the hours. Justin Garcia, pregame, postgame, middle of the game. Is there any part of the game, Justin, when you're not part of the broadcast?
That's a good question. We're not really clear on overtime. We haven't had any overtime games in the playoffs.
Well, I want to thank you, not just because of what you do, but also you saved me a ton of money. My guy, Ron, discussing, said to cover because I picked the Bucks in five. If they don't win a five, he said, take the Bulls and the points, and then it'll even out for you. And I was thinking about it until I heard you say that Bud is great in game threes in the playoffs and great in game fours. And I should have been willing to bet a ton on game four because you nailed it on game three. What were the numbers, and explain it?
Okay, so he has coached 10 series with the Bucks. They're now 8-2 in game three and 8-2 in game four. And I think most importantly, at least we hope this is the case, and it looks like it will be, the team that's won game three since Bud has been in Milwaukee has won the series 100% of the time. And 80% of those times, it's been the Bucks winning game three. So we saw it last year.
Hold on, we lost Justin for just a second.
They came out flat in game one against the Hawks.
Sure, yeah.
They just seem to get better as the series goes on. And you know, as we can see now, it's combined 16-4 at the midpoint of the series in games three and four. So for whatever reason, that's where they figured things out.
Well, I mean, and I said this to Ben Bruss. He's like, well, in game two, you know, it takes you a while to adjust. Adjust what? When DeRozan is scoring at will, timeout. All right, Drew, let's go. Guard him for the next 4 minutes. Let's see what happens. No, you can't do that. You got to adjust for game to game. But clearly something happens in all these series. What do you say happens in game three that didn't happen at the start of the series? Is that Giannis?
Well, I mean, I think that part of it, but also it's not ideal that you had to play without Chris Middleton, but that did force them to change how they were approaching the series, where they just went ultra big and went with that jumbo starting lineup. And the Bulls have no answers for that because, you know, we saw early Bobby Portis getting off to the start he did. When you're starting Portis and Giannis and Brook in the front court, DeMar DeRozan has to defend one of those guys, and it was Bobby Portis. So they had the advantage there. That's how they won last year, too, is just not necessarily going with that size, but just playing more physical and big and dominating on the glass. And those have been staples under Bud to dominate on the glass, keep your opponents off the line, and, you know, win on the defensive end, which is where they want to get things done. You can do that with that lineup, especially against a borderline inept offensive Bulls team. So I think part of it is that. But, you know, also, I don't know if you want to call it stubbornness. I think what we've seen from Bud is he likes his ways, and he's going to go with, for the most part, what got them there. That was to the detriment his first 2 years in the playoffs. He did make those adjustments last year, but he's more of an adjust as the series goes on versus adjust in the game. If things are going wrong, and you point to game two, rather than changing up how you defend DeRozan, and they did some things differently in games three and four, he's going to stick with what they practiced.
Help me, Judge. I don't get that. That's fifth grade basketball. You're not changing the whole game. Or like you mentioned, the big lineup. Well, Portis has played. They could have easily. He didn't just invent this. He had to know that it worked. I don't know. Did they use it at some of the points? How could you not use it? Or maybe they did, and I'm wrong, in game two. I mean, there must be something he learned in San Antonio where he says that over the course of the series, this is the way to go. He's really smart. That has to be it, right?
Yeah, it's pretty. He's kind of talked about this before, that one of the things he's taken with him from Pop is, you know, if we're going to go down, we're going to go down with our best and with what we do the most, and that the fear is, you know, 2-3 years ago when it was, hey, why don't we switch more and why don't you do this? We were never told this directly. It was kind of indirect. But, look, if we're going to lose, I don't want to lose just going with switching defense that we've only done a couple of times. I'd rather lose going with what we constantly work on. And there is some merit to it. There's obviously not, where if you know that's not working, what do you expect to happen? But he's just a guy that would prefer to go down with what got him there and make the adjustments between games versus in the game.
And I would say the stats you gave that it's worked, or as you said, I mean, it worked last year all the way through, but in game three and game four. All right. Purely for money, you mentioned they win the series, but how do they do in game five? 8-2 in game three, 8-2 in game four. Do you got a game five number for me?
Oh, man, now you caught me off guard. I'll have to look that one up. But
I'm not in a rush. You can do it. You can do it in the pregame in your million hours on the Bucks.
Well, they won the last two games fives they played in last year. They obviously lost game five to the Nets in a game that they should have won.
Right.
If it weren't for 7-3 from Jeff Green, they win that game too. So in the recent history, they've been really good in game five, but that's primarily last year. Because you think back to the first few years, they obviously lost game five to the Heat. They did win game five against the Magic, but lost game five against the Raptors, and basically 500 coming into last year, but last year's where the success was.
All right, I've always said that the Bucks GM deserves more credit. I mean, isn't Grayson Allen another indication of that? Yeah, you got Giannis, but rank everything he's done in the last year plus, and it's almost like he's perfect. I mean, they won without Middleton because they haven't missed him, with Grayson Allen on the offense and Portis with the defense because they're bigger or whatever. They're clearly going to miss him at some point, but if Grayson Allen plays like that, they're not going to miss him much.
Yeah, and, you know, Grayson Allen gives them a dimension they haven't had before. That last year with Brent Forbes did, that was great and all, but you couldn't play him past the first round. And Grayson Allen's the first player in Bucks history to have two straight games with five or more threes. And last year, they were just such a bad shooting team in the playoffs that I think a lot of us forget. They won the championship, but they shot 32% from three, which is among the worst we've seen from an NBA champion the last two decades. They got by on their defense. And Pat Connaughton was their best playoff shooter last year in the mid-30s, but that wasn't a very high volume of threes he was taking. So if Grayson Allen can do this, that's something that they haven't had before. And I think the big difference, too, is he's going to get the comparisons, or at least early got the comparisons to Brent Forbes, because on paper that was basically who he was replacing. But he can do so much more. He's obviously bigger than Brent Forbes was. We've seen the athleticism he has. He can put the ball on the floor and attack the basket. But he's a more capable defender than I think he gets credit for, too. And, you know, as we just said, that's what's going to keep you on the floor with Bud. And I think back to a couple of sequences yesterday where he had three steals in the first half and picked the pocket of Kobe White to start transition. So he gives them something they haven't had before and certainly didn't have in this postseason run. And as you said, it minimizes the loss of Chris Middleton. You're obviously going to need as much offense as you can get against the Boston Celtics. But Grayson Allen is what they got him for. Is the other thing. He gave up Sam Merrill for Grayson Allen. So the trade that just keeps on giving is that Drew Holiday deal that you got Sam Merrill in that trade, or the rights to Sam Merrill as part of it. And then the following offseason, you flip him and you turn it into Grayson Allen.
Talking with Justin Garcia, and they want him to be a part of the team for a while. This wasn't a short-term deal, right? I mean, they believe in him as being a part of the team for, I don't know, how many years do you think?
Yeah, well, and they extended him very early into acquiring him. They got him, didn't see much, and then already signed him to that two-year extension. So he's going to be here for two more years. And, you know, that was where you kind of could see the writing on the wall early, that he and Dante DiVincenzo entered the league together and both were facing free agency. The Bucks trade for this guy, and you think this guy plays the same position as Dante, and we knew there was questions on him. But they trade for him and they extend him immediately, and of course we see a Dante DiVincenzo move. But, you know, for everything Dante brought them defensively, there were still some of those moments where you think, man, you just need some offense when the offense grinds to a halt. And that's what Grayson Allen is giving them. I mean, what you thought Kyle Korver was going to be 2 years ago, and Nico Mirotic, and the list goes on. Grayson Allen has become that lockdown guy that if he's open, it's basically a guaranteed three, and they just haven't had that, especially for a guy that can do that in the playoffs. Because it's one thing to be a good shooter in the regular season, but to do it in the playoffs, Grayson Allen is showing he can do that.
All right, of all that you could say about John Horst, what do you want to say the most?
I agree with you. I think it's he goes under the radar, and it's moves like that, just because his craftiness is what I would speak to. Because, you know, when you have Giannis, your general manager isn't going to get the credit that he deserves. But putting together that move to bring in Grayson Allen, even some of the moves last year, the way that they brought in P.J. Tucker when, you know, P.J. Tucker hitting the trade market, and, man, he would be a great fit with the Bucks. But I think we all said, what do the Bucks have that the Rockets would want to acquire him? Every single year, John Horst is able to piece together these things. And we saw it again, the trade with Dante DiVincenzo. I know the jury's still out on that because you haven't seen Serge Ibaka much, but it freed up some more room, and it also was kind of tied to bringing in Javon Carter, which I think is married to that trade. But he acquired more second-round picks, which is what John Horst has been the best with. He's used those to bring in, you know, four second-rounders for Nico Mirotic. Granted, it didn't pan out, but nobody thought the Bucks had the assets to bring him in. Nobody thought the Bucks had the assets to get P.J. Tucker. And even a Drew Holiday trade, we thought, well, this guy's perfect. He fits everything you need. The Bucks just don't have anything to get it done. He has that creativity where when it seems like, well, there's no way for this to happen, the Bucks are always lurking and able to make one of those moves because of John Horst.
All right. How long is his extent? How long is his contract? Because if I was the Brooklyn Nets, I'd want to do whatever necessary to get him and see what he'd do to clean up our mess.
Yeah, we don't know what John Horst's length of his deal is. We don't really know what Bud's is either, just the extension that he signed. But look, I think Bud obviously has spoken very highly of him. And it would take a lot for John Horst to leave the organization. It would have to be a mutual thing the way things have gone the last few years.
All right. I look forward to the pregame and the numbers for Game 5.
Yeah, I'll look up numbers for Game 5, and I will credit you specifically for that.
No, you don't have to credit me at all. People are going to want to know it because there's some serious coin to be made, and I'm telling you this, unless you give me some other numbers in the next series, I'm going against the Bucks the first couple games.
Especially... I would assume if the Celtics close out today, which I would believe it happens.
Yeah, they're playing the Celtics. We just Wednesday. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I mean, assuming both of the series wrap up by Wednesday, I would think we're starting that series Saturday or Sunday, and the 2-week timeline for Chris, again, that's assuming he can play in 2 weeks, but you got to believe he's going to miss at least the first two games of that series.
Yeah, I'm going with the Celtics for sure. In Game 1, I have to get your numbers on Game 2. And then when everybody's against the Bucks, I'm switching to the Bucks in Game 3. What?
Exactly. That's how it's done.
That, I could be rich by then, and I'll give you total credit. All right. Thanks, Justin.
All right. See you, Homer.
Justin, pleased to know I care that much about the Bucks. What do I care most about, Pebble?
Winning money.
Winning money. And I should have won it here. It played out perfectly as it's done in the past. Against them the first two, you don't have to pick them to lose the game. The points, if you want, just go against them in the spread and then go with them in games 3 and 4. I'm doing that in the next series. I'm telling you now. Next.